Today is the second day of September. Welcome to the Daily Audio Bible. I am Brian, grateful. Grateful to be in this new month and moving into it. Grateful to be here today around the global campfire as we gather in again and get cozy and settle in this safe oasis where we just give our hearts permission to let go. Let go of all of the cares and obligations, all of the stuff, all the pain, all of it. Just for a minute, just for a few minutes here. It's a safe place here. All we are doing is reading the Bible. So it's a safe place for us to kind of let down our guard, open our hearts, and take another step forward in the scriptures. So I'm grateful deeply to be here with you today. And as we've been talking about, as promised, hang out till the end of day. Jill and I are coming back together for a little discussion, and we are really, really excited about. So stay tuned for that. But let's move forward into the scriptures now. So yesterday we concluded the book of Job. Some deep, deep emotional territory that the scriptures leads us into. Today, we're going to begin another book that leads us into very, very deep emotional territory. It's called Ecclesiastes. And both Job and Ecclesiastes, as well as the book of Proverbs, the Song of Solomon, and some of the Psalms, these are a specific genre of literature known as wisdom literature. So wisdom literature isn't really there for all of the answers. It's there to point us in the direction of where we wrestle, where we contemplate, where we do the work. If you've ever been in therapy, you know, a good therapist is definitely not going to be telling you what you should or should not do. They will be helping point you in the way of wrestling, where you can do the work. So wisdom literature is kind of like that in giving us, I guess, in a modern kind of way, opportunity to have our hearts pointed in those directions. So Ecclesiastes we're moving into, and this is traditionally associated with King Solomon, who was known to be, right, one of the wisest people ever to live. There's plenty of debate the biblical scholars have about Ecclesiastes, as well as about every other text in the Bible. But likely the Ecclesiastes did originate with Solomon in some sort of way, collected together in some sort of way, and was translated and updated in the same way that translations are updated today and modernized today. So Solomon carries this mantle of wisdom supernaturally from God as it is bestowed upon him. And we've read Solomon's story. He was the most powerful and wealthy man of his time. And he indeed could pursue anything his heart desired, and did. Like, no matter what he woke up and dreamed up, nothing was off limits to Solomon. And he was the son of King David, was a very, very successful, revered king who brought peace to the land. So Solomon had peace and enormous resources. Like, enormous. Nothing was off limits. He had 1,000 of the most beautiful women in all of the world as wives and concubines. That's a lot. He had royalty. He was incredibly powerful, incredibly revered and respected, and carried the wisdom of God. So, For a man who has it all, as we go into Ecclesiastes, this is going to seem out of character. Because we would think, man, what would it be like to have unlimited money, unlimited resource, unlimited power? I don't have to get up and go kind of do my job for my paycheck. Like, I can do whatever I want. If I want to build a tower, I'll build a tower today. If I want to build a wall, I want to build a city. If I want to hang out with one of my 1,000 wives, if I want to get on a ship and sail away, if I want to tour the land, if I want to study trees, if I want to make a zoo, like, whatever it is I want to do, I can do. So for Solomon to kind of write what seems to be fairly pessimistic can seem out of character. We would expect Solomon to write this memoir of greatness and great, unbelievably satisfying experiences. Ecclesiastes can read like a hopeless rant of depression. If we look underneath it all, though, and we should, I mean, Ecclesiastes has become one of my very, very favorite texts in the scriptures. If you look underneath the surface, this is a very stark, deep look into the human heart and its motives. And so it is bringing wisdom as deep and penetrating as the book of Proverbs does. Because we are all pursuing dreams and goals. And we can maybe fathom or imagine what it would be like to be like Solomon, but we all know, like, that's not going to happen. So very few of us ever get to do whatever we want, whenever we want. So that leaves us always able to continue to pursue. And in the pursuit, we're hoping meaning will arrive. But because we can never get it all, we can always keep chasing. Right? We can always say, if I just had that, then my life would be better. If I could just ever get to the place where I could do this, then my life would be full and be better. And so we always have something that we can chase and something that's new to pursue. What if, though, we did get it all? That's what Ecclesiastes exposes and kind of unpacks and opens up those notions. What it looks like to actually have it all, and there's nothing else to pursue in order to try to create meaning as we continue to chase and chase and chase, all of a sudden is revealed as false and cannot bring meaning. Solomon did pursue and did achieve whatever he wanted to. Like, whatever he set his hand to do, he could and did. Later now, though, as Ecclesiastes is written, later, as he's getting into his latter part of life, his beautiful harem of women ended up seducing him into idolatry away from his connection to God. And now he's musing. He's an older man with his vitality starting to wane, who can and, like, has worn himself out with pursuits. And he's looking back over all that he's done. And we would look at all he's done and go, what a fantastic, amazing, otherworldly kind of existence and life. But he's that guy. And he's looking back at all that he's done and finding it meaningless, that the pursuit of meaning is not in these accomplishments or achievements. Nothing means anything without God. And so that really leads us forward out of Job and gives us really profound and deep things to consider. And so as we go into this text, well, Holy Spirit, come, we invite you to reveal to us as we listen to Solomon, somebody who did everything, to reveal to us the things that we have been pursuing all our lives in exchange for some sort of meaning, some kind of promise that life will come from it. And looking to those things, expecting that if we can achieve and accomplish them, then we will have life, which only you can give. I mean, we find that, as Solomon says, there really is a time and a place. There really is a time and a purpose under heaven for everything. And then maybe we've been chasing the wind, hoping that it will give us meaning and purpose. And may we understand that no matter what we achieve or gain, we can still find it to be empty. And that all of the accomplishments, if we actually make it to the top of the mountain and plant our flag, and we have been the most successful of anybody we've ever known, none of that will give us meaning that only you can give, and that only a relationship with you can give, because only you are the true source. And so we begin. Ecclesiastes, chapters 1 through 3. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, and yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who followed them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless. A chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this, too, is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom, and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise have eyes in their heads, while the fool walks in the darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I said to myself, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless, for the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise, too, must die. So I hated life, because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me, and who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish. Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil, into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This, too, is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. This, too, is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days their work is grief and pain. Even at night their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless. A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that people will fear him. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has been before, and God will call the past to account. And I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. I said to myself, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked. For there will be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed. I also said to myself, as for humans, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Surely the fate of human beings is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Humans have no advantage over animals. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the human spirit rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. for who can bring them to see what will happen after them. Second Corinthians 6, 1 through 13. As God's co-workers, we urge you not to receive God's grace in vain. For he says, "In the time of my favor I heard you, and in the day of salvation I helped you. I tell you, now is the time of God's favor. Now is the day of salvation. We put no stumbling block in anyone's path, so that our ministry will not be discredited. Rather, as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way, in great endurance, in troubles, hardships, and distresses, in beatings, imprisonments, and riots, in hard work, sleepless nights, and hunger, in purity, understanding, patience, and kindness, in the Holy Spirit and in sincere love, in truthful speech and in the power of God, with weapons of righteousness in the right hand and in the left, through glory and dishonor, bad report and good report, genuine, yet regarded as impostors, known, yet regarded as unknown, dying, and yet we live on, beaten, and yet not killed, sorrowful, yet always rejoicing, poor, yet making many rich, having nothing, and yet possessing everything. We have spoken freely to you, Corinthians, and opened wide our hearts to you. We are not withholding our affection from you, but you are withholding yours from us. As a fair exchange, I speak as to my children. Open wide your hearts also. Psalm 46. For the director of music of the sons of Korah, according to Alamont, a song. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, and the mountains quake with their surging. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice, the earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us, the God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth." The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Proverbs 22:15. folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away. Father, we thank you for your word once again. Thank you for the kindness and the grace of it, this tangible gift, something that we can actually hold on to and touch, that leads us into the center of our own soul and into the heart of our own story and into the recesses of our motives and the choices that we make and why and the consequences that come as a result. And so, Holy Spirit, as we're in Ecclesiastes now, may we find where true meaning lies and not chase the wind anymore in false intimacy, false pursuits, false accomplishment, and false purpose. May we begin by appreciating profoundly what we have, what you have given to us, the people that you have given to us to love and steward and cherish, and the time that we have been given, because it is finite. We have a certain amount of time to be human upon this earth, and it is a gift, and its currency and how we spend it is how we spend it. And when it's spent, it's spent. And so show us where we are chasing the wind and where true meaning is, we ask in the name of Jesus. Amen. Welcome back to another story time with Brian and Jill.
Story time? Is that what this is?
I don't know. It's kind of what we do, is tell stories.
Yeah.
Spend
Welcome
some
to
time.
20th year anniversary extravaganza continues.
Another installment. It's great to be here with you, my beloved.
It's great to be here with you. I love these little sacred spaces of conversations.
Yeah. It's great to be here with you and everyone else who is here with us. Look at all those friends out there.
I see all of the lights lighting up the globe all over the world.
Yeah. So great to be here for another opportunity to share.
Mm-hmm.
And so today, obviously, we've been celebrating 20 years. And hopefully we get into 21 years and 22 years and we're doing more and more and more of this.
I hope so.
Sharing stories and insights and things that we're learning along the way
mm-hmm.
as we continue this journey. But we've been doing a lot of looking back to look forward in this 20th year. And so a lot of music, and that's been a lot of fun. Today is a story, but it doesn't lead to a new song.
No.
It leads to something that we've never, ever done before.
I've been so excited about this, and then I'm so tired today
yeah.
that my excitement just feels...
This is such a long time coming.
Mm-hmm.
Something dreamed about for years and years and years, and finally...
Yeah.
Something that's finally here. And so we do have to tell a story, though.
Yeah.
We have to go back. I guess we have to go back and start with Ezekiel.
Kindergarten.
I think we should start at the beginning. Ezekiel was born into this community. And on the day that he was born, it was a scary day.
Mm-hmm.
And there were moments of profound fear.
Yeah.
For us both, when it was becoming really difficult for Ezekiel to be born. And we were trying to have him at home, and it was just getting very stressful, and he was under duress, and your body was getting weaker and weaker, and so we had to end up at the hospital.
Yeah, I just knew something was not right.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's funny about that is I kept saying, I want a small baby. I want a small baby.
Yeah.
I have really big babies to the point where my midwife was like, Jill, everybody and their sister knows you want a small baby and you don't want to go past your due date. And I was like, oh, well, as long as we're clear. Okay. But he was our biggest and he was so big that they later said that his size is what helped the distress. Because he was so big and so healthy, even though my body was in distress because he was so big, but his size actually helped with what was happening.
Yeah. Nevertheless, what was happening was we're in the hospital, we're in the ER, they're wheeling you in and out of places, and I don't know where you are. And then finally, I'm with you, and they've got you hooked up to every monitor, and man, it's not too long before a doctor's saying, look, this heart rate is not right. The stamina of you, the mother, is not good. Like, we need to do emergency surgery. Mm-hmm. And we need you guys to decide in the next minute, basically. And
I said, let's get an epidural, slow everything down. I want to have him naturally. I don't want to have C-section. And he said, that's not an option.
Yeah.
You've got one choice, and I just need you to say it's okay.
So here we are, like, making this quick decision. You're not doing great. Ezekiel's not doing great. They're about to wheel you away, and I don't know if I'm ever going to see you again.
Yeah.
And that scared me. And I guess we made sure we told each other we loved each other.
I don't know, we're going back to this. Yeah, as they're wheeling, I heard the midwife who stayed with us say, Brian, they're not going to let you go past this point. My body is shaking uncontrollably. And I said, stop. I need to kiss my husband.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they took me back to you or let you come up, but I was like, wait a minute. There's not been a moment. I need this moment with you before.
Yeah.
I'm determined not to cry, so I'm trying not to cry.
Yeah, me too. So then you went through the double doors and you were gone. And I went back to the room that you were in. And, you know, the hospital bed's gone now. So I'm just like, there's a chair in there. And it's this empty hospital room. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing right now. And I just remember at that point being able to reach out to this community. And just put an alert out, like, this is what's going on. And would anybody who sees or hears this, or, you know, would you pray for us? And responses kind of came quickly, really, really, really fast. I mean, the surgery was really fast as well. So I'm sitting there thinking, I have no idea what's about to happen or how long this is going to take. But I started seeing people show up, and people in this community remember. I can remember when they started listening to the Daily Audio Bible, because it was the year Ezekiel was born. Like, it was, they remember Ezekiel being born. So many people remember Ezekiel being born. And that's a long time ago, 13 years. So it was like a big marker, a big thing. And sure enough, it wasn't that long. And they're calling me into the nursery and they're bringing the baby in and weighing him and doing all the things and putting him in my arms. And I'm thinking, this is beautiful. I'm hello, son. Like, it's so nice to meet you, but. And he didn't see it happening that way. I saw him being born and being put on your chest. And that's how it was supposed to go. And that's how it was planned to go. And so I'm holding him. And then I remember bringing him to meet you. And we have a picture of that. And that was beautiful. So that's chapter one of this story. Ezekiel is born.
I woke up in the bed, not knowing what was going on. You are 10 pounds 5 ounces. 10 pounds 5 ounces, but your voice brought me to. And I just remember you standing there holding him and saying, is that our baby?
Yeah.
Just trying to figure out what just happened.
Yeah.
Then remember thanking God we made it.
Yeah, me too. And so Ezekiel comes into the world and he's the Daily Audio baby. And he travels the world, actually, his first years, all over the world with us. And he continues to grow into a toddler. You know, he takes his first steps and he learns how to talk. and he's our little man. And as the story goes, kids grow up and they become of school age. And that was like a hard thing. Like, he's going to start school. Like, we're zooming forward of several years now, but he's so excited to start school. He's been all over the world. Like, he's fearless. He's been just interacting in so many situations and scenarios that it reminds me of my own childhood. But he's ready to start school, and he's super excited. And things just don't go as planned.
Yeah. Difficult school year. Our extreme rule follower got put into a classroom with a teacher that was new to a classroom of this size, even though she had had other experience teaching. And let's just say by the time Christmas came around, she had missed a significant amount of school.
Yeah.
With some personal things going on.
Yeah, her life was in some really, really complicated, really, really deeply painful things for her. That was kind of getting translated into the classroom, but then a lot of substitute teachers. And then a lot of like, okay, half of you guys are going to go into Miss So-and-so's class, and half of you are going to go into Mr. So-and-so's class for the day.
Well, she was calling out so late. They didn't have time to find a sub, and then nobody was available. And so they would split the classroom into two and put them in different classrooms. And Ezekiel got to the point where he did not know what was going to happen when he got to school.
Right.
There were some teachers that were nicer than others. And we're supposedly in one of the best school systems in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And so you think, we're missing something. They must know what they're doing. What's going on here? But it did not get better. It got worse to where little man did not want to get out of the car.
Yeah. Really, really struggled. Somebody who needed stability and predictability.
They all did. All of those children did. And he's this rule follower, like afraid to speak unless he's spoken to. And then they've got this classroom chaos, but then there's this little girl he sits by that pinches his nose till his nose bleeds, and just all of these things are happening. The librarian is not nice. He hates going to the library.
Yeah.
And so we start devising these plans, like we'll go have lunch with him. I think you went on Monday. I went on Wednesday. China went on Friday. But we could not go without him crying and wanting to come home. And then it escalated to you were taking him to school, and he was crawling over the seat to get to you. Like, it was heart-wrenching.
Yeah, brutal.
And it was so hard thinking, he is not okay, and somehow I have to make him go to this environment that he doesn't feel safe in. But we developed a really great relationship with some of the staff in the school, the school counselors, the front secretary. They knew us. They knew the situation. They were compassionate. And yet that wasn't enough for our little guy.
Yeah. And so I would drive him to school every day, and we'd be fine. And we'd get into the car line, and we'd get closer and closer to him having to get out of the car. And that's when he would start to be scared and start negotiating and just looking for a way to feel safe, because the closer that we got to him getting out of the car, the less safe he felt, even though it was not in any way an unsafe environment. The unpredictability of his first school experience made him feel unsafe outside of our presence. So whenever he couldn't see us, he couldn't feel stable and without anxiety. And I remember even working with a school counselor and him being able to learn to name emotions, which is a beautiful thing that still sticks with him. But because at this point, he's just a little kindergartner, so he doesn't really know what he's feeling or how to name it or what it means, or like, I'm sad or I'm scared.
Right.
Or I'm anxious.
And nobody's shaming him either for the difficulty. It's just, if we walked him in, there would be such a meltdown to to where we did not feel like we could leave him in that condition. It just felt cruel.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember a story of you calling me one day. You're like, I cannot do this. He is so upset. And I just realized then the severity of the situation. And it was another meeting with the school counselor. And anyways.
Yeah. So kind of at this time, I had discovered like breath work and had started understanding how breathing can regulate your nervous system, how it can calm things down, and how being attached or even familiar with our own breath is being so directly attached to our life. And there's a lot of spiritual connections there as well, but I was just kind of reading and learning some of these things about how to clear your mind and how to clear your head, and there was just a lot going on in life in general at that point. I remember one day on the way to bringing him to school, and I'm holding his hand because that's how it went. Like, he's just a little guy, he's got to sit in the back seat, but I got my hand behind me and he's holding on my hand. And the closer that we're getting to school, the tighter he's holding on to it. We would always pray before school, always asking Jesus to give him a good day, make him brave, make him feel safe, help him to know he's not alone, help him to know that Jesus is with him. If he feels scared, he can talk to Jesus and he's there. And this would kind of be our prayer. And he would be such a brave little man until his little bottom lip starts quivering and he has to, you know, get out of the car. And so one day, I guess came out of nowhere, I just said, Zeke, let's breathe. Let's just breathe. And you had been doing some work around breath as well, in exercise and stuff, and just learning breath. And so that was kind of on both of our radar and in different ways for different reasons. But I just ask Zeke, let's just breathe together. And so we take a deep breath in and blow it out and take another one. Let's take another one. Because I was thinking maybe this will settle his nervous system down a little bit. Let's take another breath and let's blow it out really slow. Let's take another deep breath. And let's do this together. And just thinking that it would help, and it did help. And one day, the prayer and the breath kind of got combined into this little thing where I said, Ezekiel, let's take a deep breath in, and then while we're blowing out our breath, let's say, Jesus, be with us. Jesus, be with me. And so that's how it would go. Jesus, be with us. And that's exactly how he would do it, with a little whistle in his breath as he blew the rest of his breath out. Jesus, be with us. And that became our little mantra, our little prayer every morning. And we started calling it the breathing prayer. And then you would start doing it with him anytime he would feel anxious. We would do it at bedtime. We'd do it anytime he felt an emotion that was overwhelming to him. Take a deep breath. Jesus, be with us. And that became like a thing, the breathing prayer. We started calling it the breathing prayer. Let's do the breathing prayer. Anytime there's an overwhelming moment, let's do the breathing prayer. And any of those of you out there that have been to Israel with us, like, I started teaching the breathing prayer in Israel a couple times in the Valley of the Doves, this really, really beautiful, serene place. And telling a little bit of this story, not to this degree or at this length, but the breathing prayer was something that became a part of Ezekiel's young life and a part of his school experience. And we wanted to never forget that. And so you found a way. You had a dream. You dreamed up how we could do that. How did that inspiration come to you?
I don't know. I mean, I wish there was a great story around it where I was like eating Chipotle, and as I ate my burrito, a vision came to me as I took a breath and inhaled the chicken burrito, but it's nothing like that. It's like it popped into my head and I was thinking, wow, what a great concept that we could share with other people, especially kids. I think fear was just such a big part of my young life.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've talked about this, but
yeah,
the fear of, honestly, the fear of hell and imperfection and going to hell and the rapture, and I'm going to do that one thing and surely get left behind. So let me mm-hmm. get this as perfect as possible. But just so much fear. Fear that my house would burn down.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I could have used this.
We both have these similar stories
mm-hmm.
of those kinds of fears, separation fears.
Yeah, just separation. I mean, I know you say that you identify, you know, your young self in him, and I do every bit as well. Just such a rule follower and afraid to talk to people. Like, I would look at my dad for permission mm-hmm. to answer somebody. Just so much fear. Like, even if I had allowance and I'm going to buy a toy, I would just panic inside that I'm not going to have enough money. I'm going to have to put the toy back. I'm going to be embarrassed. And how am I going to deal with all of this? And so I guess I just thought, man, what a great reminder that we know that Jesus is with us always, but are we going to remember to take him with us? Are yeah. we going to remember that he's there? Like, that's a relationship. He's there. It's not just, well, we'll pull him out on Sunday.
Yeah.
And whoop up into this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Emotionalism and call it a great movement of God, but an actual relationship where he's present, available, his spirit is in us, among us, and utilizable. Is that the right word? I'm so tired.
That's good.
Utilizable.
I like it.
We're able to utilize the spirit.
Accessible, maybe.
Accessible. There it is. I knew I was so close. The fruit of the spirit is available. Peace, love, joy, kindness, yeah. gentleness, faithfulness, self-control. Yeah, so it just was like, could we do this? We write songs. Could we write a little, I guess I'm about to say it.
Yeah.
Could we write a children's book? Could we write a children's book that would benefit an adult as well?
Yeah, and that would tell this story that we've just told at length.
Yeah.
And you sat down?
Well, actually, I sat down. I was like, I don't even know where to begin. I kept looking at it. I don't know where to begin. Sometimes a beginning just comes to you, and sometimes it's like, oh, that's a great middle, but it's not. So we're like, let's take Ezekiel to dinner and let's talk to him about it.
Yeah.
And so you and I are sitting down and we're like trying to pull this thing out of him in a very adult way that we're kind of pulling things apart. And he pulls out his phone. We don't know what he's doing. And he's like, here, I got the first part of the book. And he just went with it.
Yeah.
And he said it in his words. And it was so great for him to be able to express what he experienced several years after that.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't as fearful anymore. I mean, there's mm-hmm. still a lot of fear and anxiety and things, but we took him out of the school just to help for his comfort zone. I mean, everyone can do what's comfortable for them, and that's right. what was good for us. And so he could talk about it, and it was just a great beginning. And so I was like, here we go. Here's the bones. Let's work the structure.
Yeah, and you did.
And we did.
And he went through several revisions to get this story right.
Here's the funny thing about that. We're in the from the music business.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember. Oh wow, I can remember so many times I thought God gave me the song. I don't want to touch it.
Yeah.
Right. We think there's this inspiration. Not that there's not, but this inspiration of it. Sometimes people do write magic. It just comes.
Yes.
You know, like
rarely, but yes.
Rarely, but these giants in the song readings, like I sat down and the pen didn't stop till it was done. That's rarely. And so I remember talking to somebody and the frustration of people giving you stuff and holding on to it so tight. No, God gave me this.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying, great, go ask him for the revisions.
Yeah.
If he gave it to you, surely he'll give you the revisions. And so it took a little while. We got stuck in the revisions. My mind got overwhelmed. Too many words, too many thoughts, too many ideas, but you don't know how to narrow them down. was a lot of working and then sitting it down, walking away for a little bit. So it took longer than I wanted it to. But then I just kept chiseling it off and gave it to you and said, work your magic.
Kind of go through some final passes and try to... Well, I mean, we just ended up with this is the story.
Smooth the rough edges and let's just call it good.
And let's make this thing. And so then I'm getting illustrations, getting Ezekiel right, getting mm-hmm. a look, getting a kind of a tone palette, going to plenty of bookstores and looking at plenty of, like, we never did this before.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a lot of media things. This has been our lives. We've never done something specifically like in that space, like a children's book.
But so, also thinking about it in terms of, yes, this is geared towards children so that they can put words with emotions or emotions to words and know that they don't feel alone. But I don't know any adult that wouldn't be able to, or being honest, say, yeah, I am there too.
1,000%. There have been times when that is the only prayer I've got.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I can even say, the only words I can even say, the breathing prayer. Just Jesus be with me
mm-hmm.
and try to breathe through it. So there's no question that it's not just for kids, but it came out of that story. It came out of a kid's story and we wanted to illustrate it in such a way that it captured Ezekiel.
Yeah,
as a little boy and...
We absolutely needed it to be true to his experience because it wouldn't have happened without his experience and being on the other side of that.
Yeah. And so we made this beautiful children's book. Like, we made this feeling really like pulled in a direction like now it's time for back to school. This is kind of where we are in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the South, kids have been back a couple weeks now, but different parts of the country.
And we don't want to stop at school, even though it is during this time. But I can remember times not being able to drop the kids off at the nursery
because mm-hmm.
there was a lot of fear and anxiety. Yeah. And it just, I think as a parent, as an adult, you vacillate back and forth between trying to teach them to be brave and do something outside of their comfort zone. And honoring where they're at and honoring that today's not the day.
Yeah.
Today's not the day that I'm going to want them to be this brave and ask them to do something that feels really, really scary to
right.
them.
Right. Right. And so this is just a time of year that we're moving. Like the summer comes to an end and this new rhythm starts. And so anxiety is there for kids as they're adjusting to rhythm. Anxiety is there for us. The year from here only gets a bit busier and busier and busier. And so mm-hmm. just thought this is the right time. And we planned for this. And I'm so excited. Actually, we've been excited for this for so long now.
Yeah.
Dreaming of it for so long. And then working through the entire creation of it and all of those months and just manufacturing and just all of those months and to actually have been able to hold a finished copy and go, wow, that mm-hmm. is the breathing prayer.
Yeah.
It's called the breathing prayer, a little prayer for big feelings.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
And yeah, it's available now today. And we're excited to do this. It's part of our 20th year anniversary celebration. It's a piece of our personal story. It's a piece of Ezekiel's life, who's been here reading Daily Audio Bible Kids for years now and is the Daily Audio baby. And so it's like those of you who remember when he was born, this is a piece of his story and his life. And so we are over the moon excited to introduce you to the breathing prayer. And it is as simple as that. Take a deep breath. Ask Jesus to be with you. And then exhale. And then do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then do it again. And then do it again until it starts to hit your spirit. Starts to work in your nervous system. And it actually works.
And can we talk about what works means? Because I think it's important that we're not trying to sell magic here.
Right.
We're just simply trying to remember to state a truth and a promise that is available to every single one of us.
And to become present to it.
Right.
And to become aware of it. And to realize the fact that we're breathing at all is a gift. And it's taken in and it's given back.
Yeah.
And inviting Jesus to be with us in those things that take our breath away.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to find our breath and remember that he's here and we can breathe through it.
Yeah. We're not alone. Lonely is a feeling. Lonely is a state. But we're not alone. In the world, it can be scary. Outside of our comfort zones and safety zones are scary. But the presence of God is the safest place it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And you did a beautiful job. I remember you sending me the final copies and pages, and I was like, this is more beautiful than I imagine.
I think we always, as creatives, strive for excellence, and I think this is, it's beautiful. And it's a beautiful portrayal of what we're talking about here. And so, if you got kids, struggle with anxiety, this is for them. If you got grandkids, this is such a great, simple, short children's book to read to them. This is a great bedtime story.
Mm-hmm.
If you got anxiety and you're an adult,
this
is a beautiful, beautiful reminder of how to get centered again and grounded again. And so, the breathing prayer.
That's so crazy. It's here.
It's here.
Today.
A little prayer for big feelings. You can get it.
Get it today.
You can get it now at the Daily Audio Bible Shop, whether that's on the app or on the web. Go to the shop, dailyaudiobible.com, and you'll find the breathing prayer.
And should we talk about, if you want more than one copy,
Yeah.
If you would like to purchase a bunch and give them away, if you buy five, you'll get one free. And they do make just beautiful gifts. Beautiful gift. I will give this
absolutely
away to a lot of
absolutely.
People.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we, just a couple of days ago, sat down at this table, Ezekiel, myself, and Jill, and the first 500 copies that are ordered are signed. We all sat in a row and signed them. And so those first 500 will be signed by Ezekiel and Jill and myself. And they are available now.
Today.
So go and grab yourself the breathing prayer, a little prayer for big feelings as a part of our 20th year anniversary celebration.
And we hope you love it. And we hope that you'll use it. And we hope that you'll remember Jesus is always with us.
I think we should just close with the breathing prayer.
Okay.
So everybody take a deep breath. Jesus, be with us.